Friday, June 6th, off-season yields slowly but surely to the start of the NFL 2014 regular season, and a lot to do until we get there. And a lot of negotiation that needs to happen between the 49ers and Coach Jim Harbaugh. Now that the Colin Kaepernick contract is done, can they get a deal done with Harbaugh? We reported last night at ProFootballTalk.com that the negotiations are stalled. Specifically, an offer has been made to Harbaugh. Harbaugh hasn't responded, sensing a little impatience on the part of the 49ers as they wait to hear from Harbaugh. And the impasse continues to be that Harbaugh wants to be paid like a coach who has won a Super Bowl. The 49ers politely remind him, "Coach, you've yet to win a Super Bowl. You came close a couple of times, three straight NFC title games, one Super Bowl appearance that almost resulted in one of the greatest Super Bowl comebacks of all time, if not the greatest, if they had pulled it off. What is Jim Harbaugh worth?" And what we could ultimately have here, and we never see this, you know, there's no salary cap for coaches. There's no franchise tag or any other restriction. We never see a coach throw caution to the wind and say, "You know what? I'll just become a free agent. I'll let my contract expire. I will go to the highest bidder. I will go to a different city. I will go across the bay to the Oakland Raiders. I will go anywhere I want to go." And I think one of the reasons that hasn't happened is because in any given year, there aren't many spots available. 5, 6, 7. There's no guarantee that that guy's going to get the job if he is available. And if you don't find a job, what do? You go a year without making anything, and then you try to come back the next year. But when you consider the longevity the coaches have, and that a good coach like Harbaugh would be in demand, even if he sits out of here, he can sit out of here and pick his next spot. I think Harbaugh could be the first guy to roll the dice on himself and become a free agent. And the question becomes whether the 49ers would be comfortable next year with Harbaugh in a lame duck season. Usually the question is the coach comfortable being a lame duck? And very rarely does that work. What if for the first time ever, the coach says, no, we'll just play it out. We'll talk after my contract expires, and I may indeed go and coach a different team. It could start a new trend. And actually, I thought Rex Ryan was going to do it. I thought Rex Ryan was going to say, I don't want a Band-Aid contract extension, a meaningless extension. I'll coach out my contract. I'll bet on myself, and we'll see what happens. Harbaugh could be making that bet. At least for now, he's willing to gamble that his value could drop, not increase, based upon what happens with the 49ers this year. Speaking of gambles, the NFL apparently going all in with the leverage play that hopes to turn the draft into something like the Super Bowl. It would never be as big as the Super Bowl, and if it would be, there'd be something seriously wrong with the NFL. But I thought it was curious yesterday, to say the least. First, the report comes from NFL Network that should have essentially been a press release because, they leak it to their in-house guy. Hey, Radio City's out. It's down to New York, Chicago, and LA. And then not long after that, NFL spokesman Brian McCarthy says, "Hey, Radio City's out. Could be New York, Chicago, LA. Other cities remain in the mix." My read on it is the NFL is trying to beat the bushes here. The NFL is making it known that the draft is in play and that the audience, intended audience for yesterday's report and eventual press release by the NFL, isn't us. It's the cities out there that may be interested in hosting the draft and in turn ponying up the money that will attract the NFL's interest. That's the way the NFL does business, and no judgment here. This is just reality. The NFL brand is so big that they can sit back and wait for someone to offer a deal that is great for the NFL and bad for the person offering the deal, justifying it by saying, "Hey, we're getting the NFL draft in our city. It's going to be good for our city. We're going to get a lot of mentions of our city." Like Omaha, right? What a big deal that was. Some stupid offensive call that still no one knows what it means, but all of a sudden it's a big deal in Omaha. How big of a deal is it if the draft goes to Chicago or LA or somewhere else, if some other city decides, we can either buy a monorail or we can host the draft. Let's host the draft. Let's cough up whatever the NFL wants. Let's do it. Let's go do it. Let's become major players for this property. That's what the NFL is trying to do. And even if the NFL wouldn't be serious about whatever mid-level town decides it's going to try to host the draft, that offer applies leverage to whoever they want. It's genius, It's obvious. It's still genius. Still obvious. What's obvious is that at some point, JerMichael Finley, free agent tight end, is going to have a tough decision to make. And we addressed this last week with Blake Barrett, his agent, when we learned that Finley has received medical clearance to continue playing football. And now since then, the question is, will a team clear him? Now, the Steelers would be a potentially obvious candidate because Dr. Joseph Maroon, who performed the neck surgery on JerMichael Finley and cleared him, would be one of the voices involved in clearing JerMichael Finley to play for the Steelers. And it would be slightly inconsistent, to say the least, if Dr. Maroon didn't clear JerMichael Finley to play for the Steelers after clearing him to play football. But if it's true, and we touched on this last week with Barrett, if it's true that Finley's got this $10 million disability policy and that he can cash in on it if he chooses not to play, even though he's been cleared to play, and I'm not sure it's quite that simple because I know insurance companies, all due respect, i.e. here comes the insult, they love to take our money. They don't love to give us our money back and other money on top of it because their commodity is money. They don't want to give us money if they don't have to. And if he's cleared to play, I don't know how you give him a disability policy if he's cleared to play. If he's cleared to play and no one's interested, oh, well, you've been cleared to play. It doesn't matter. But assuming that that's the case, assuming he's got a door number one, door number two proposition, door number one being the $10 million disability policy and no more football versus playing football and having to make a lot more than $10 million in gross income to offset the $10 million tax-free, what do you do? How do you justify exposing yourself to future risks, both of neck injury, further concussions? Remember, he had a concussion a couple of weeks before the neck injury. You've got orthopedic injuries. You've got other things that could happen. And you're going to end up with less money in your pocket than if you just say, you know what? I had my time. I won my ring. I'm going out on my own terms. And I'm taking $10 million tax-free with me. Seems like it should be an easy decision to make with the brain. Could be a tougher decision to make with the heart. We wish JerMichael Finley the best as he tries to make that decision. And it's really not framed yet. It's really not crystallized. Once there's a team that clears him to play, once there's a team that makes him an offer, then he can sit down and he can do the flowchart or whatever he uses to make the decision. $10 million tax-free and no more football versus whatever this team is going to pay me minus taxes plus the risks of playing football. To me, no-brainer. JerMichael, take the $10 million and run. We're going to run to a break. When we come back, John Moon Mullen of CSN Chicago will join the program to talk about the Chicago Bears. What can we expect from them? They've added a new player today, a quarterback who was once, not today, yesterday, a quarterback once tutored by Mark Trestman in advance of the 2010 draft. And it wasn't Tim Tebow, unfortunately. Then we're going to talk to you, fortunately. We've got our list of Twitter questions. We're going to open the phone lines to wrap the show. Before we do the PFT Planet segment, the last one of the week, we'll talk to John Mullen. We'll do that after the break. Stay with us. This is PFT Live. Chicago Bears could be a very interesting team as we head into the 2014 season. Chicago could be an interesting town as the 2015 offseason approaches. And let's start right there with John Mullen of CSNChicago.com. One of the cities reportedly finalists for the 2015 NFL Draft, Chicago. What do you think the chances are, John, of Chicago hosting the draft?
Well, you know, Mike, the mayor is squarely behind it. Obviously, that kind of thing is good for PR, and it's also good for brings a few people into town, obviously. So it's got a lot of support. The only caveat is the mayor is also behind the Olympic bid. That didn't go so well. So I'm not sure. We'll see. But no, they have the facilities, and it seems that the commissioner and the NFL want to spread this around a little bit, so this time could be just right for them.
I think also, and ultimately, the NFL wants to make more money off of the draft, which means somebody's going to have to put together an offer that feathers the NFL's nest even more than it's already feathered. Do you think that the money is there from whatever source to make the NFL happy enough to say, yeah, we'll come take your money and do the draft in Chicago?
Yeah, I do, Mike. Like I mentioned, the mayor is behind this kind of thing. We got a Chicagoan in the White House, so to speak. So, you know, Chicago is not in dire straits. It's not a city facing a lot of bankruptcy. So it would not be a tough sell to the locals. And again, the exposure, I think, would look good for the city. So I don't think there'll be any resistance in city council. And as I say, the mayor is squarely behind it.
We tried to get the Olympics. Now let's settle for the draft
exactly.
Instead. That
exactly.
Could be the billboards. A guy who was drafted 4 years ago now, a year before Cam Newton was the first overall pick to the Panthers, Jimmy Clausen, people thought he'd be the quarterback of the Panthers. He waited a long time on the open market. The Bears have signed him. What attracted the Bears to Jimmy Clausen?
Well, they want to get as much competition for the number two spot, as much as Jordan Palmer is believed in by Matt Cavanaugh, Mark Trestman, Aaron Cromer, the offensive hierarchy. They've made no secret about wanting to keep getting better. David Fales was drafted in the sixth round. Unless he wets the bed, he's probably going to be the number three. Whether Jordan Palmer is the guy, that's probable. This is just about competition. And the funny part is, you know, he's kind of almost, Clausen's almost in the same boat or the same boat with no oars as Palmer in terms of not having thrown a pass since, what, 2010? So I think it's just get him in here, get a look at him. Because right now that's five quarterbacks on the roster. They're not all going to go to training camp. So whether a kid named Gerard Johnson makes it, unknown, but it gives him a chance. He's going to be certainly competing to get his career back, so it'll intensify things a little bit.
How much did the fact that Mark Trestman helped get Jimmy Clausen ready for the 2010 draft factor into this?
Yeah, a fair amount, Mike. So many things in life and business, and so it's comfort. And if you have a comfort level with somebody, you saw something. I don't think it's an ego situation, because obviously that's 4 years ago. And Trestman has tutored and mentored other quarterbacks, too. So it's a comfort level, and Trestman's a big believer in that. The funny part is the Clausen rep, as far as a personality, is almost diametrically opposed to what Trestman is. I mean, the brashness and the cockiness. Now, maybe that's been pained out of him. But you know that the Bears and Trestman certainly talked to him. Mark specifically talked to him before they made the deal. So if they're satisfied he's coming in here hungry and humble, then that's something, because obviously Trestman saw something back when he worked with him.
The biggest offseason acquisition for the Bears by far was defensive end Jared Allen. Give us an update of how he is making the transition to the Bears defense.
Well, you know, it's still flag football, Mike, so it's really until the pads come on, it's hard to judge any alignment. I'm actually really impressed at the quickness. Again, it's easy, but he's getting out of a stance. He's getting into backfields. He's working against Jermon Bushrod, who has actually done very well against him when they were opponents. The speed, they're not simplifying the scheme exactly, but they're not asking him to do – it's still going to be a one-gap scheme, so it really plays to the strength of a guy like Allen. So he's a fit. He likes the system. He likes the teammates. He's playing next to Jeremiah Ratliff. So there's a real chemistry that's already building in a unit that could have as many as eight new starters from the 11 that started the Packer game.
And what do we expect then from the Bears defense this year? It was a disappointment last year. The Bears have been built on defense for so long. Do we expect improvement?
Well, first of all, it couldn't get any worse, really, could it, Mike? I mean, unless they're going to get eight or nine.
It could be the Cowboys defense.
Well,
it could be
right.
The Dallas defense.
That's true. That's true. The thing that they did this offseason, you mentioned Allen, the guys that they brought in are established. Lamar Houston was arguably the best defensive player on the Raiders. Again, that's maybe the tallest midget kind of thing, but the kid can play. He's looked excellent in terms of quickness, even to provoking a bit of the one fight. I mean, how many fights do you see in OTAs? Well, Lamar Houston was going full speed and provoked one. But you got Jeremiah Ratliff, who's going to be here all season. Allen, they get Willie Young, who was good enough to start in Detroit and probably won't start here. Now, that doesn't mean it's an elite defense, but with new safeties and a better defensive line, this thing, they get exponentially better even before the first snap. If the Bears defense had been bad last year, this team would have been in the playoffs. It was horrific. So they've gotten guys who still have something in the tank and something to prove. So if the front is good and it's gotten a lot better, then everything gets better.
And you mentioned that scuffle that erupted between Lamar Houston and Martellus Bennett. You've got Bennett taking to Twitter saying, "I go hard every expletive day." No doubt about that. Not a single ounce of expletive in me. Look, and this is one of the great conundrums of the offseason. These practices are supposed to be non-contact. You don't get scuffles without contact. And
right.
If a guy's saying he goes hard every day, it tells me that there is contact. How do the Bears strike that balance between getting guys to play football and respecting what the rules are in the offseason?
You know, Mike, it's not really contact exactly. It's more that incident kind of broke when Houston basically sustained his rush too long. It was more of a, hey, the play's over and, you know, somebody gets bent out. It wasn't that it wasn't like Sean Lee getting put on the ground by Zach Martin or something like that. This was more of a, you know, guys will just sustain a block or they'll sustain a rush a little longer than the etiquette seems to be. And Houston is working hard. I mean, I think that he goes hard, and I'm not sure that Jordan Mills, who was actually blocking him initially, they weren't quite ready for the level of effort. So it wasn't exactly contact. It was more like how much are you trying to make me look bad, that kind of thing, and that's what usually sets guys off.
Receiver Brandon Marshall recently got a contract extension that'll pay him $10 million a year on average. Alshon Jeffrey eligible for a new contract after this season, talking about how he and Marshall are the best receiving duo in the NFL, and he very well could be right. Is Jeffrey going to be banging on the door to get a contract as soon as he's eligible?
For sure, and I don't think Phil Emery wants to let him even get close to that. So he's still in his rookie year, so there's only so much they can do. But what they're really positioned economically with Marquise Wilson, a seventh-round draft choice, is probably the number three. So they don't have, you know, with Earl Bennett here, the money was getting a little tighter in the wide receiver group. So the money is going to be there for Jeffrey. This was a guy that Phil Emery traded up to get. Again, now Phil's not going to do things just to satisfy his ego, but the kid has played above his seat even. So they'll be looking to, the talks will be going on before before the contract ends. And these guys have, again, a terrific chemistry. They work out together. So it's not a, I'm not sure Brandon Marshall's ready to hand the crown to the young, you know, the young buck behind him. But there's some mentoring going on, and I think that's big with the Bears. So they want to keep guys who have a fit. And again, that's very big with Mark Trestman and the whole organization.
And one way to create some money if need be at some point down the road would be to part ways with Matt Forte, who is entering the third year of his contract. And his is backloaded, $5.95 million base salary this year, cap number of $7.9 million. Boy, at what point do they realize that they're paying this guy more than the market, far more than the market would bear, far more than his current skills would bear? I get the feeling that if this could be the last year, if not something happens during the season that makes the Bears decide it's time to move on.
You know, I don't know about that, Mike. You know, for all of the devaluation that people talk about happening at the running back position, Forte really had a year almost like you'd have out of Marshall Faulk in the March years. 74 catches. He was number two in rushing, and he was number three among running backs for pass receptions. He's such a fit. He's a potentially 2,000-yard guy in total yards. So I don't know that they're looking to make a big change there. They did draft Kadeem Carey in the fourth round, kid with some production out of college. But I don't know that it's necessarily a right-now replacement for Forte. And this team looks at right now at itself as a Super Bowl team. They think they are all the pieces are in place. The defense has been fixed. Forte is such a big part of that. His pass protection has gotten better each of the last 2 years. You know, he's just such a fit for the offense because of his pass catching. It's just the money is actually right and matches up with the production. He's not as dominant a player maybe as Adrian Peterson, but as an all-around guy, he's not somebody the Bears are worried about what they're paying him right now.
What do you think the Bears are this year? Are they a Super Bowl team?
I think they're going to be in the discussion, Mike. You sound like a homer when you start predicting 11-5, but as you talked about earlier, if the defense is good, this is the number two offense in the league. I mean, the Bears are the only team that has somebody in every position group in the top 10. You know, Denver may put up more points and Seattle may do this or whatever, but the Cutler-McCown combination was a top 10 quarterback duo. Forte is a top 10 running back. Martellus Bennett was tied for eighth in catches among tight ends. You mentioned Marshall and Jeffrey. And the Bears' offensive line is the only one that is in the top 10 in both sacks per pass play and rushing average. That's a Super Bowl offense. Whether the defense can be, you know, even top 15, now I think you have to talk about them in that discussion.
Well, and the NFC North continues to be highly competitive. The Lions probably getting better. The Vikings possibly getting better. the Bears. Do the Bears have to win the division to be in the Super Bowl conversation, or could you see them running the table via the wild card route?
You know, it's hard to rule anything out of me, although they were 10-6 2 years ago and didn't make it. So the simplest thing would be to obviously win the division, but getting past number 12 has not been easy. In fact, getting past any Green Bay quarterback for the last 20 years has not been easy. I don't know, Mike. The schedule is a little dicey. I mean, they're at Carolina, they're at Atlanta, they're at New England, all in the first, at the Jets, at the 49ers. That's all before the off week. You know, they have to avoid getting themselves into a hole. If they can break fast, you know, be maybe sitting at 5-3 or 6-2 at the break, yeah, then you're in the wild card discussion. You know, things get a little easier with Tampa Bay and Dallas and Detroit and Minnesota in the second half. But no, I think they belong in the discussion, and I think they could be good enough without winning the division. Although obviously they just got to learn how to beat Green Bay before they even have that discussion.
So you assume that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with new coach Lovie Smith will be a pushover? Is that what you're saying?
Did I say that? Lovie, are you listening?
No. You implied it. Listen, but here's the point, though. How much pressure ends up on GM Phil Emery if Lovie Smith goes to Tampa and instantly turns that team into a competitor and instantly puts that team in the mix where maybe the Buccaneers steal the sixth seed away from the Chicago Bears?
Oh, that would be a tough one. That would be tough. But, you know, here's the thing, Mike. I mean, Emery fired him after a 10-6 season. I don't think it would surprise anybody for Lovie to turn that program around, and I'm not sure that would be hard to do after Greg Schiano. So I would expect them to be a whole lot better. The nice thing in terms of if you're looking at little tiebreakers and things, the Bucs have to come here and play. It would obviously be embarrassing, but I think people kind of swallowed it, the departure of Lovie, because he hadn't gotten the team in the playoffs enough. If he turns it around, you know, I think it's far enough away and it's been a couple of years. I don't think it'll be quite as raw as if he had just fired him this offseason. You know, they took a year off, so I think the rawness might be gone.
But isn't there a concern that at some point Emery ends up on the hot seat if it turns out that he did the wrong thing, that he should have kept Lovie Smith, and instead he trusted a guy who had never been an NFL head coach, had spent his last however many years in the CFL? And I know the Bears were better than expected last year, but if the Bucs become a playoff team and the Bears don't, at some point, isn't that Emery's rear end on the line?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's necessarily connected to Lovie, though, Mike. That's definitely something you have to start taking a hard look. If they don't get to the playoffs this year, that will be 3 years under him that they didn't make it. But, you know, also, I don't know that anybody expected Emery to pay Josh McCown what the Bucs did. So it won't be Lovie necessarily getting the team in. It'll be McCown. It'll be an upgraded receiver group. It'll be a lot of factors other than just letting Lovie go. Now, I do think you're right. I think there is going to be the seat will start getting warm if somehow the Bears, with all this new talent, it could be even by midseason if they're somehow, you know, 3-5 or something. There's going to be a whole lot of grumbling, and that'll be irrespective of Lovie because, you know, McCown was beloved. I mean, I don't think anybody begrudges the Bears of not paying him that much. So if Lovie is doing well, that means McCown is doing well, and I don't think that will be a total surprise to Chicago.
Well, we'll see what happens. It'll be fun to watch it unfold this year between the NFC North and what happens in Tampa and whether the Bears can get back to the postseason, whether they can make some noise. John, as always, we appreciate some time. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Mike. Be well.
There he is, John Mullen, CSN Chicago, our good friend and corporate colleague. When we return, it's time to talk to our good friends out there, or enemies, if you want to call in and you want to dispute or disagree. I mean, we can always hang up on you. Either way, pick up that cell phone, 888-237-5269. We got the Twitter questions, as we always do. We hope to have some phone calls. These Fridays in the summer, you never quite know, because usually people are at work and they're looking for a break from work, but maybe they're not working, or maybe they're trying to get a little extra work in, so maybe they can go a little easier on Monday after they have a rough weekend. Either way, just call in and tell us what you're doing or not doing at work. Just call us, 888-237-5269. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. Every time you see that orange and black logo with the NBC logo on the top and the PFT Planet sign in the middle, that means it's time to answer your questions. Before we can answer the question, we have to put a question up there. that we can respond to. And here it is from @MattClemens. Do you think Andrew Luck is the type to take less money to give his team a better shot to win? Look, this whole conversation about less money, what does it really mean to take less money in a salary cap environment where now the cap is going up $10 million a year? Tom Brady took less money. He got $30 million to sign. Less money. $30 million to sign. Kaepernick, supposedly a market deal, $12 million to sign. I think that you want to do a fair deal, you want to do the right deal, but you also want to exert your leverage. Look, only one team's going to win the Super Bowl. Now, as long as Andrew Luck's in Indianapolis, the team will contend. And the NFL is now built around the idea of having a franchise quarterback. So the franchise quarterback is entitled to get as much money as he can. And I understand, yeah, and there's a balance there. Plenty of people say, oh, the salary cap doesn't matter. Teams can afford whoever they want to afford. Well, that only takes you so far because there are finite dollars available. But if you're a franchise quarterback and if you're the main reason why the team is competitive and you only have so many years where you can make this money, I mean, I know on one hand how much is enough. On the other hand, the people aren't paying the money to come watch Jim Irsay sit in the owner's box. The people are paying the money to watch the players play. The networks are paying the money to televise what the players are doing. The players are the product, and the best players are entitled to the most money. This whole concept of taking less, here's what I'd like to know. How many owners ever took less in any business setting that they were in? How many owners ever did anything other than take every dollar that they could justify legally, and in the case of some, maybe not legally, out of a situation? Capitalism comes from the word capitalize. Capitalize on a situation, make the most money. That's our society. And this salary cap allows the media and the fan base and teammates and the front office to put the guilt trip on a guy. I don't know that I buy that. We'll see if Andrew Luck buys it. Colin Kaepernick bought it. Colin Kaepernick did a bad deal for him, all in the name of this warped sense of teamwork and competition that maybe applies in high school or college. But when you're talking about getting paid for a sport that in any given moment you could be done playing for life, I think that at a certain point the interests of yourself and your family need to at least be on par with this vague notion of loyalty to a team that will not be loyal to you the moment that the team decides it no longer needs your services. We need the services of Craig in Syracuse. Welcome to the program.
Hello there, Mike. How are you?
Good, Craig. How are you?
Doing great. I just have to say you are by far the most authoritative person on the NFL that I ever follow on Twitter. And whenever I tell somebody some breaking news, like, where'd you get that from? I'm like, Pro Football Talk. You have to follow it. You're the best. So I just want to give you
a thank you so much. The check is in the mail. Thank you.
Anyway, no, I heard a little interesting comparison the other day about the NFC West being the compared to the SEC. Of NCAA college football, you know? And I thought that was just kind of interesting, you know, with Colin Kaepernick and Russell Wilson and all those running quarterbacks. So what would the other divisions be compared to? Would the NFC North be like the Big Ten and NFC South? What would that be, you know, the Pac? So, you know, just kind of curious what your opinion or thoughts would be on that.
That's a great question. And, you know, not long ago, the NFC West would have been a mid-major conference. CUSA, is that still around? I don't even know the names of all the lower level conferences anymore. The NFC East, not that long ago, grand scheme of things, was the best division in the NFL. And now it's like, okay, who really wants to win this division, even though the Giants came out of that division and won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago? I'd have to sit down and think about it. The difference is that the divisions are so small. And part of what we need to keep in mind, the NFL scheduling formula, which allows every team to eventually, over a four-year period, play every other team once, at least once, and then over 8 years, every team comes into your building at least once. You play the same teams from the same division when you're in a given division. You play the same teams from the same division in the AFC, the same teams from the same division in the NFC. You play each other twice, and then there are only two games that really vary, but for an entire division. The difficulty each year depends upon which two other divisions you have to play. That's why the Raiders this year, the schedule is just abysmal because they have to play every team in the NFC West. So the perception, here's my point when I finally answer the question. The perception is something that changes year in and year out, because that schedule really does have an effect on how good a division is perceived. If you're playing two weak divisions that year, you're going to look like a much better division. If you're playing two strong divisions, it's all going to even out. You're going to beat each other up, and the records may not be all that great. So I think it is something that can change every year. But it's a fascinating discussion, because there is a perception now that some of the divisions are much better than the others. And there's definitely a perception that one conference is much better than the other, especially at the top, and that's the NFC, much better than the AFC at the top of the conference. Back to the Twitter bag, C. Crawl. We can rely on C. Crawl every day. He or she, thank you for your questions. What coaches do you believe are on the hot seat this year? You know, every year, six, seven, or eight guys enter the NFL season on the hot seat. When I ask this question, when I consider this question, I have this grid in my mind of the 32 teams. Let's start with the AFC East. Rex Ryan of the Jets, he's on the hot seat. That contract extension he signed doesn't matter. He's on the hot seat. He's in the same position he was in last year. If they don't get to the playoffs, he could be done. The other coaches in the AFC East, there's no one that really stands out, although Joe Philbin could be getting close to the end of the line here, especially with a new GM who may want to hire his own guy. Seat is warm, maybe hotter than warm for Joe Philbin. In the AFC North, there's no one who really stands out as being in major trouble. Marvin Lewis has gotten to the playoffs three straight times. That should be considered an impressive accomplishment. And I guess Mike Pettine, under recent precedent, perpetually on the hot seat if you're the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. In the AFC South, no one is really jumping out there. They've had their changes. They've had their new coaches. And we just see where things go from here. Three of the four teams have new coaches this year. Is that right? Two of the four teams have new coaches this year. In the West, Dennis Allen and GM Reggie McKenzie, very hot seat there. I think a mandate to win. The only thing that saves them is if Mark Davis, the owner of the team, doesn't want to pay the buyouts, and if he doesn't want to pay the money that it would take to get an upgrade in there. That's just the AFC. Let me run through the NFC real quickly. Jason Garrett, big trouble. Tom Coughlin, possibly trouble. Beyond that, is there anybody who really jumps out as being on a super hot seat? In the NFC West, every team is considered good. In the NFC South, maybe Mike Smith, if the Falcons have another horrible season. Maybe it won't be an aberration. Maybe he'll be out of a job. But that's a handful, 6, 7, 8. Every year we see it. And every year we see 6, 7, 8 who end up getting fired, because the NFL, as I say all the time, the ultimate zero-sum game. For every good team, there's a bad team. Back to the phone line. Tyler in Seattle, welcome back to the program.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man.
Good. I just wanted to ask you, you know, you brought up recently a lot of talk about, you know, teams moving to L.A., and I actually wanted to take that in a different direction and say, if a team did move to L.A., would there be certain division shakeups? And let me give you an example. Say, for example, the Jacksonville Jaguars moved to L.A., would maybe they be put in, like, I don't know, the NFC West, and then maybe the Rams would go to the AFC South? I mean, do these how coveted is these division rivalries for some of these teams, and would the NFL actually change divisions if it made sense geographically?
I think the NFL would consider it. They'd cross that bridge when they came to it. For a long time, we had Arizona in the NFC East. Now, that changed when the realignment from 2002 happened, and we had eight divisions, four teams each. I think it's a possibility. It just depends on whether or not there is a reasonable way to make changes that wouldn't unnecessarily disrupt other natural rivalries. And obviously, from the standpoint of moving to LA, the team that makes the most sense, from the standpoint of not screwing up the current structure, would be San Diego up to LA, Oakland down to LA, St. Louis in the NFC West, over to L.A., where they truly would be in the West with Seattle and Arizona and San Francisco. Jacksonville, I don't see as a team that would move to L.A. I think if Jacksonville moves, they'll move to London, and most people say Jacksonville's not moving. But that is going to be a factor, because you don't want to have like an L.A. team in the AFC East. That just makes absolutely no sense. The travel burden on that team that has to go to each of those three East Coast cities would be unfair, to say the least. Back to the phone lines. Max in New York, you're on the program. What's up?
Hey, Mike. Great show so far. Didn't want to bring it down too much. Just was reading your article from a couple of weeks ago on Donald Sterling and Tim Irsay comparison, and I like how you ended it with yet. Just wanted to get your opinion on, now that the charges came out and that, you know, his license is suspended for a year, do you think the NFL will go ahead and possibly take away the team? Because it is sort of a ridiculous standard, and you know, that how that Donald Sterling, you know, obviously I'm against what he said, when he says something and Jim Irsay is putting people's lives in jeopardy and he's, you know, just maybe possibly being suspended for a year or whatnot, I think it's a little bit ridiculous. Definitely think Roger Goodell could take a page out of Adam Silver's book. Just wanted to get your follow-up opinion on that.
It really is a fascinating dilemma for the NFL, and thank you for the call. If we take away the franchise from Donald Sterling for saying something horribly inappropriate, horribly racist, in a private setting where he was illegally recorded, if that's the standard for taking away a guy's team, how does getting behind the wheel of a car in a position where the guy is completely unfit to do so, creating a public safety hazard, how is not that an equivalent violation? I don't know how you walk through that minefield. And when you consider that there are multiple players right now who either have been banished for a year or face a one-year banishment because of multiple violations of the substance abuse policy, substances that really don't matter their job performance, in my opinion, substances that in two of the 22 states where the NFL does business are now legal, and they just, for whatever reason, they can't comply with that policy. Do we put Jim Irsay on a similar program? Do we drug test Jim Irsay? And if Jim Irsay, because of whatever addiction he may have, if he can't consistently make the right decision, do we banish him for a year? Do we take away his franchise? What does it mean to hold an owner to a higher standard when there's a policy in place that will, from time to time, throw a guy out of the league for the minimum of a year? Tough decision for the NFL to eventually make. I do think Jim Irsay will be suspended before his case is finalized, but how they deal with him going forward and what they do by way of a financial penalty, the two biggest questions in my mind as they sort out the Jim Irsay situation. Last call for the day. Elliot in Minnesota, welcome to PFT Live.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. It seems to me and pretty much everyone else that I've observed that the AFC is going to come down to Denver and New England this year. So I am wondering which team you think had a better offseason. And I will throw in one more wrinkle and maybe get your reaction to that. Denver this offseason really seemed to adopt the strategy of loading up the shotgun, signing up as many free agents as they possibly could. Recent memory that hasn't worked so well, you can think of the Eagles in 2011 with the whole Dream Team fiasco. So is there any reason to think that that's going to work better for Denver than it has for other teams recently? Thanks a lot.
You know, yeah, thank you, and that's a great point. The only time that's ever really worked was with the 1994 San Francisco 49ers, who lined up a bunch of guys, brought them in, put it together, and won the Super Bowl. Now, they had a franchise quarterback, and that's the key. If you've got a franchise quarterback who's already making a lot of money, and you've got the cash and the cap space to turn it around and go after these guys, and you've got the motivation to do it now because you know that time is running out, and you recognize you may be reaching a point soon where you just don't have the resources to be competitive, then I think that it does make sense, and I think it can work. And I think that Denver isn't necessarily concerned about separating from New England as it is about trying to close that 35-point gap with the Seattle Seahawks. That's what motivated the effort to load up the defense. Now, have they done enough offensively to score more than 8 points against Seattle? The offensive line, still suspect. The running game without no Sean Marino, is it going to be any better? How is this going to work? And Peyton Manning, the way he got banged around in the Super Bowl, I don't know that they've done enough to score enough points to beat the Seahawks, but that's what they're trying to do. This Peyton Manning excursion is ultimately a failure if they don't win at least one Super Bowl. So they're trying to do whatever they have to do to win one Super Bowl. I think they're better than the Patriots. That doesn't mean they necessarily beat the Patriots if they play in the postseason, but I think Denver, best team in the AFC right now. The question is, can they go back to 0-0 and have that motivation, do everything they have to do, grind through the season when they know that waiting for them in February in Arizona is going to be a team like the Seahawks or the 49ers or maybe even the Arizona Cardinals, teams that have a physicality that it doesn't seem like the best teams in the AFC currently can match, but that could all change. A lot of football to be played, a lot of stuff to happen between now and then, even in the slow times. And we thank you for joining us in the proverbial slow time for the NFL. We'll be back on Tuesday with PFT Live. No program on Monday, but Pro Football Talk on NBCSN will be back on Monday night. It's not on tonight. What's always open? The old proverbial, why do you even put locks on the door? ProFootballTalk.com. Not that I don't know how we'd lock the damn thing anyway, but we're always open 24 hours a day, all weekend long, from your tablet, from your desktop, from your laptop, from your cell phone device, from your little... They got the little watch now that you can, hell, I don't know what all they have, but you know what you have. Whatever you have, ProFootballTalk.com is the way to get to us. Have a great weekend.